Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook/ IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPokulski.com.
And then through medical school, I built up my personal training business, wrote for magazines and wrote for newspapers and things like that, and really, you know, took an interest in the fitness world and in the bodybuilding world. Once I graduated, I sold my personal training business, worked as a doctor, but always kept my interest in bodybuilding. But it was really more of a, I've always been a big fan of Flex magazine and Muscle and Fitness magazine and Muscular Development. So I've always kind of, you know, just read these magazines as a hobby as I've sort of progressed through medical school. I guess that takes us up to about 2009, 2010, when I really made a decision I wanted to get back into doing more stuff back in the fitness world, which is when I met my long-term business partner, Mark Gilbert. So, Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm kind of the old guy, but I'm also the least educated guy. I haven't got one of these fancy PhDs or doctorates, but I did do a little university. I got a Bachelor of Science in Nutrition. Always been into the weightlifting and all that, and sports, etc. I got International Society of Sport Nutrition certified sport nutrition certification. So that's kind of the academic bit. Been 20 years in the sport nutrition industry. Worked for Muscle Tech and a bunch of the other companies. Worked with several Mr. Olympia contenders and guys you'd know and this and that. Just kind of always have my hand in either formulating products, doing some regulatory or some marketing in the industry. I had a brief foray into pharmaceuticals, worked for a couple of the big pharma companies, but like Dan, the fitness bug came, you know, dragged me back in. You can't leave this industry. So I was back in before too long, and here I am. Fortunately, I got back in because this, like you say, Ben, I think this concept, the sky's the limit with how beneficial it could be for bodybuilders, for people that are serious about getting results. You know, this is the one thing that we know the future holds. We'll be able to help people use to really get that extra edge. But yeah,
I'd love to get into more about that later in the call, obviously, right?
Like, yeah,
it's so curious for me. Like, I'm so intrigued by you know, what we could possibly do, and I literally believe the sky's the limit. So this is amazing that we got to get on call with you guys.
And then the story gets even more interesting then, because my long-term school friend, as in me and Stuart have been best friends for 23 years, it was at a wedding in 2011, at our best friend's wedding, that Stuart and I started to talk about some work that him and Sam had been doing. So this would be a good time for Sam and Stuart to both introduce themselves and explain exactly what their history is, their academic history and personal history as well.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dan. Well, we were running our own company at the time, Ben, which was creating artwork from DNA. We actually both had the background in genetics, so it was a little bit different at the time. But essentially, I was using I have a PhD in genetics from the University of Birmingham. Spent a lot of time developing the techniques that we use to analyze DNA. And I was applying that in a way where we could generate pieces of artwork for people that would show them a piece of their DNA, and it would tell them which version of that particular gene they had. So, for example, did you have the gene for fat burning efficiency? Which metabolism gene did you have, which version? Did you have the gene for speed, as it's termed, the actin 3 gene? So we were describing all this to Dan at the time, and he instantly saw the potential in terms of knowing this information and how you could apply it to your training and nutrition.
Right.
Stuart, I'll let him jump in here and tell you quickly a little bit about his background.
Hi, I'll make it succinct. I know you want to listen to Muscle Genes, Jack. So I do.
I'd like to hear as much about you guys as possible.
I could bore you. So I So yeah, I've known Dan for many a year, and yeah, was with some of the time. But I'm currently researching at the University of Oxford. I did my DPhil there. I'm really interested in the heavy end, understanding sort of how complex genetic traits affect certain diseases, looking at neuropsychiatric disease, but also neuromuscular disease as well. So I've come from more of a pathological background in being interested in the neuromuscular system, and applying my genetics knowledge and my sort of biological knowledge to the problem that muscle genes is looking into. I think I'll end it there, but you can ask me lots about biology. So
basically, in 2011, again, it was at our best friend's wedding, and in fact, I'll mention him, Kieran, because our friend Kieran is also a fan of you, Ben. So I've got to drop my our best buddy's name in. So we were talking at our friend's wedding, and I would say over the last 10 years, maybe the last, well, it's, I mean, you go back to the sort of the Frank Zane days when people would, you know, refer to genetics and things like that. But specifically over the last 10, 15 years in bodybuilding, you know, genetics has been a really big thing. You know, people talk about what people's calves look like, or, you know, how long their limbs are and things like that. And then they kind of draw these kind of, you know, phenotype-based conclusions about the relevance of genetics. But actually, when the more I kind of talk to Stuart, and given my own scientific training and background and stuff, I really started to feel that there was a real possibility that we could start to get to the bottom about what it is that makes a bodybuilder a bodybuilder, because you could take 1,000 guys off the street, and you could get them to do exactly, well, in fact, the majority of them couldn't do what a bodybuilder does. But if they could do what a bodybuilder could do, they wouldn't get the same results. You know, you could get people training in the same ways, and they just simply wouldn't get the same results. You could get them eating in the same ways, and they simply wouldn't get the same results. I'm not saying they're not capable of getting to a certain point, but yeah, by doing things the same way, people would not get to the same place. And that was kind of the point, and the where I sort of really, really realized that actually genetics was really important. And this might be the opportunity for us, and we might be the company that could actually, we could be the group of people, I should say, because it wasn't a company back then. We could be the group of people that could start to really dig deep into this as a topic, for the fact that, A, we really enjoy bodybuilding, we really enjoy the sport, we've got a lot of friends in the industry, and B, that we could actually have a really positive and significant impact on the industry and the sport as well. So we started to research the genes that we knew about and the variations in the genes that we knew about and how they could potentially have an influence on what somebody looked like relative to their training and nutrition. But we also started to try and research, you know, some of our own ideas in some of the other pieces of genetics information that was available that we might also be able to apply to the models that we use to construct this information and be able to give people certain levels of information about how they could, you know, better train or better eat relative to their goals. So this all started back in 2011, and things have just, I guess, really grown quickly and moved really fast. So we spent a couple of years researching and developing, and what we didn't do was we didn't kind of hit this from the basis of saying, right, let's get as many genes as possible and, you know, blah, 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 blah. What we actually did was we just ensured that we focused on the absolute most important genes that had the most amounts of research and the ones that we could genuinely start to take our own information, knowledge from our own backgrounds, you know, exercise physiology, exercise biochemistry, nutrition and things like that, and figure out the ways that we could apply it to the genetics information that we were researching. So we really stuck to the really most important genes, kind of high level genes. And then gradually over the course of the last sort of year to 18 months, we've been building out the genes and the gene variation profiles as the strength of the research increases and how we're able to actually, again, apply the models that we use to predict variations in outcome. So we started selling the product last year. And in the very early stages, again, you know, true to our roots, we really did focus on working with bodybuilders. So, you know, we had the pleasure of testing and working with Ronnie Coleman, Dorian Yates, as two of the, I guess, the biggest named Mr. O examples. And you know, and since then we've tested lots more bodybuilders, people like Steve Cooklow, we've tested Flex Wheeler, Rich Piana, Rich Gaspari, Jim Stepani, all these sorts of crowds, and it's phenomenal the response that we've got.
So from my perspective, the implication for this is massive, and not only for bodybuilding, it's across any sport. You know, it's almost like you could create a standard. You know, you could kind of create like a prototype by looking at someone's genetics or even someone's parents' genetics and saying, hey, you may be predisposed to this, or your children may be predisposed to this, especially because it's non-invasive type research, right? Like, it's not like you have to take a big muscle biopsy or something like that.
The way we kind of come at it is the one thing that I'll say from the outset is that we don't make any reference or inference to anything to do with children. We're very much believers in that when it comes to children should have the choice about the things that they choose to do rather than
when I say children, I meant like maybe 16, 17 year old kids who are looking to perhaps get into professional athletics. What am I predisposed to? You know, can I build muscle, or can I, will I be fast, or will I be predisposed to endurance running, or those types of things? You know, not, when I say children, that was, sorry, I guess the wrong term.
I mean, there's huge scope for the information that we can gather from genetics. I think the most important thing is that what we've created is essentially it's a tool. So rather than us creating a product that tells you what you should do, i.e. trying to represent some sort of potential of what you're good at, really what we do is we focus on you telling us what it is that you want, and then we use the genetic information to help you get there. If that makes sense.
So we try to
avoid the idea of potential, because you know there's so many very in its broadest sense, you know, if you, you know, you might have, you know, you could have someone that comes along and says, you know, you have, you know, you're genetically great at this, but then there's been an event in your life that's happened that's meant that, well, there's no way you're going to be able to do that. So, right. You know, we try to avoid the idea of potential and focus on the idea of what we can actually do with your genetic information and how we can use it and decode it and decipher it to actually and use it to help you get to your goals. And that's the awesome thing about you know, working with people like, you know, Stuart with a phenomenally intricate knowledge of genetics, and Sam with, you know, phenomenally intricate knowledge of genetics, and then combining with Mark's 20 years of experience, you know, expert experience in the industry, it's been great to be able to get to that point where we can do that.
That's brilliant. So amongst the pros that you've tested, has there been any some genes that stand out, or any standard that you've kind of come across, or is it all very extremely different from person to person?
Yeah, I mean, with regards to training methods, for example, people like Dorian Yates and Ronnie Coleman have always been very vocal over the years about specifically how they train and how they have trained, and you know, and you can literally read back over 20 years of you know, blogs and newsletters and magazine articles and things like that about how they've trained. And and actually, when you look at these guys, and then when you look at their genetics, you know, their genetics is very in keeping with their training methods relative to how they've got bigger. So what we have found is that we've found that certainly, you know, where we've been able to sit down with bodybuilders, go through their genetics information, and they've been able to say, you know, that's why that's worked, or that's why that never worked. And for us, obviously, that's a massive education. I mean, you know, one of the most phenomenal things for us has actually been because we've been able to work with these guys intricately, and they've, you know, the amount of information that these bodybuilders have given us. Because, you know, we should never forget that a bodybuilder is a scientist in their own right. You know, they're a scientist of their own body, and, you know, and you have to listen to them. And you do not, you know, do not ignore even the tiny minutiae bits of detail they're giving you, because it can mean a massive difference, you know, for our own understanding going forward. So, you know, when we sat down with some, you know, phenomenal guys, really, really intelligent, you know, really intelligent bodybuilders, and we've been able to really extract all this information, and therefore, you know, and then when you look at the genes, and you know, they'll say, that is why that worked, or you know, that's why that didn't work. I had a really great conversation with Johnny Jackson in Canada a couple of months ago, and you know, Johnny came up to me and he said exactly that. He said, Dan, I read through this report, and he said it matches every point in my career. It just completely matches how things have happened for me, the things I've always been good at, the things that I haven't been so good at. You know, the way training's worked for me, the way training hasn't worked for me. You know, and that's brilliant. I mean, that's honestly, it's so great. And you know, so it's been a real pleasure for us to work with this kind of cohort of people.
Are you able to kind of get into a few details about that? So, like, what types of things that may be included in the report that these people will get, and how
Mark,
that may help them?
Yeah, Mark, do you want to talk a little bit about the sorts of things we talked about in the report?
I think the most exciting things for most people is like what Dan was just talking about there, how we both know that Dorian Yates trained in a very brief, very intense way with long rest between sets, and Ronnie trained in much more often, each body part twice a week instead of once like Dorian, and all these things, and their results came out exactly like we would have recommended they trained the way they found work best for them. So we're obviously very happy to see that the science matches up with the real world experience of two of the best bodybuilders ever. But other examples are when we look at things like carb sensitivity is the one that's probably the most interesting right now, just because, you know, I mean, everyone's been talking about carbs for, you know, a good 10 years now. That's been a very big focus of getting your nutrition right. And what we've found, of course, is that, you know, because you always get these guys that are on, you know, they'll come up and they'll proudly tell you they're on 150 grams of carbs because they're dieting, or they're on 75 grams of carbs because they're dieting. In some cases, these are young guys who have probably very, very good insulin function, can handle carbs great. They can get ripped on 300, 400 grams of carbs, but their carbs are down because all the bodybuilders say you got to get your carbs down to get ripped. Well, what we've found is that there's big genetic differences between many of the initial big important genes we looked at have a pretty strong effect on your insulin sensitivity, the way you handle carbs. What we'd call in the industry, you know, carb sensitivity. And what we also know, we've matched that up with some other data that shows, especially in people when they start getting overweight, if they diet, you can have two people who are obese and you give them a hypocaloric diet, so a diet that is 500 or 1,000 calories below their needs, so they'll lose weight. Well, the person who's obese and still has their insulin sensitivity, they'll lose weight on a low-calorie diet. You don't have to worry too much about carbs. But the other guy that might have poor insulin function, and again, that's genetically determined, he will need his carbs reduced, so he won't react as well to just a gross calorie change, a calorie reduction. He needs to have his carbs reduced, and he needs to get different sources of carbs, and you and I both know that probably means lower GI, more fibrous carbs, etc. So that's one really good example where we've matched up research from what works best in a diet to research that shows how different people's insulin sensitivities more susceptible to decline, because everyone's insulin sensitivity declines over time. So I think that's the most interesting one, but we also have ones for vasodilation. So we look at you know these nitric oxide products. I know quite a bit about this because I helped patent the first one that was ever on the market, in 1999. So we've looked at some of the nitric oxide genes and some of the other genes that affect nitric oxide. And so we know certain people vasodilate better. Certain people will. Well, you know, given the same diet, one guy might get high blood pressure, one guy might not. And that obviously has implications for the kinds of supplements they should take before training. And it has implications for when they're bulking, when they would otherwise experience high blood pressure, or if they're using certain supplements that mess with your blood pressure, then certain people need to really be careful with their diet and their supplements to mitigate some of that potential damage or high blood pressure, et cetera. Now, we don't make any health claims. So the way we phrase everything is we phrase it as we're not telling you what's best for your health. All we're telling you is what's going to improve your performance. Now, if the two things happen to coincide, we give you a recommendation that improves your performance and it also improves your health, then all the better. But we don't talk about health because that's a different can of worms that
we have to be careful about certain things that we say and certain things that we do, because we're not trying to come across as a medical device or a medical product.
Right.
We're a training aid, using really good fantastic research into being a quality fitness something in the fitness toolbox, basically something that you can is just going to improve the chance of achieving your goals. But the other things as well that we talk about are things like we give you ideas about training volumes and training frequencies depending on your goals. We look at your ability to recover. In fact, probably recovery is probably arguably one of the most important things, actually. The amount of variation that you'll find, where you'll get one person will say, you should have this much rest in between training sessions. Someone else will say, well, no, actually, I don't have any rest between training sessions. And then there's the arguments of who's right. Well, the chances are both people are right, because based on genetics, some people will need longer to recover than other people. So we look at things like recovery. We look a little bit at some of the genes that are associated with anabolic signaling. The actual portfolio of genes and gene variations that we're looking at is growing quite significantly.
That's amazing. That's exactly what I wanted you guys to speak about, was what types of things are you looking for when you say Dorian was able to train once a week and get to where he was, and then Ronnie was more predisposed to getting results at turning to his body parts twice a week. From a science perspective, like, what genes are you looking at, and what predispositions are you guys looking
well,
at?
We obviously can't talk about anyone's specific gene information.
So
if we give you, so just a completely, a very sort of general kind of look at that. So if, for example, we looked at, say, the actin 3 gene and the ACE gene, so the actin 3 gene sort of gained a lot of notoriety as being one of the genes that they generally refer to as the speed and power gene. And the reason they refer to it as a speed and power gene is that it was generally a gene that you would normally if we say there's an R version of the gene or an R allele or an R variation, and then there's an X version or an X variation. Generally, that you would find that sprinters, for example, or elite sprinters, it'd be very rare to find one who doesn't have an R copy of this particular gene. So, hence one of the reasons why it got referred to as the gene for speed and power. And then one of the other genes that we look at, again, a very well researched gene, is the ACE gene. And the ACE gene is one of the genes that we look at when we want to talk about things like, it's one of the genes that is to do with endurance. It's one of the genes that has to do with fast and slow twitch muscle fibers and things like that. So if we just use these two genes as an example, when we look at the variations in these genes, we can give some accurate information and accurate predictions about the types of volumes that people should use in terms of training, in terms of achieving muscle growth. But also we can give information about recovery as well, and specifically how long between training sessions people should have or people should take to recover. And this is based on research to do with DOMS, research to do with rhabdomyolysis and various other kind of parameters. To do with that enables us to give this kind of information. Mark, do you want to go into that in a bit more, or Sam, do you want to go into that in more detail?
Yeah, if I can jump in there, Dan, because the actin 3 one is a really interesting one, actually, because it's linked to the production of a particular protein. So as Dan was explaining there, if you've got a particular, what we call a knockout version of that gene, which is the X version, you don't produce that particular protein. It's a protein called alpha-actin and FRT3, and it's known to be related to, in particular, sort of muscle recovery. It's a structural protein that benefits that. Sorry, Stuart wanted to.
Also, it's having the proteins also involved with better testosterone signaling. Is that correct?
Inflammation.
So there's a very clear difference between people that have a working copy of that gene and those that don't. There's no negative impact of not having a copy other than, as we propose, obviously those particular individuals may be prone to needing longer recovery periods because they don't have the protective effect of that particular protein. That's something which I believe has there been any testing done on that yet, Mark, or is that something we're looking into?
It's a structural protein they've shown to exist or not exist.
Yeah.
It helps. It's like almost think of a cross bracing protein in your muscle fiber. So it's not just a protein that signals for stuff. It's physically helping with the muscle contraction. They've done a lot of work in rodents. The muscle tissue's very similar, but also in humans they've shown a recovery effect whereby you get much sooner supercompensation between workouts. If you take an XX through a workout and an RR through a workout, everything else being equal about these two people, same workout, a week later the RR guy will step back into the gym and he'll lift more weight than he did the first time. The XX person will step into the gym and he won't lift more than he did last time. Everything else being equal, of course, because there's lots of factors. Because we have a weighted system we use, a flow process that determines things, but if you know what I mean, the X is they're more susceptible to muscle damage. They're also more susceptible to inflammation.
There's an interesting caveat with that as well, isn't there, Mark?
Women, yes, yeah.
In that there is a gender difference, and the XX. Sorry, Mark, I'll let you.
Yeah, they showed something almost the opposite in women. Strangely, that women tend to recover a little better when they have the XX. But again, because the actin 3 has a fairly strong influence on, significant influence on testosterone production, that's probably the avenue by which the genders differ, because obviously women would have a different response to a different testosterone output. So really, every time we read another study, it puts another piece in this puzzle that's this unbelievable puzzle.
One of the things with actin 3 is that it's long been proposed that it's one of the places that has an effect is with fast twitch muscle, isn't it? It all seems to be there seems to be this sort of magic association with fast twitch muscle. People haven't 100% got to the bottom of it yet, but there seems to be something there.
That's all amazing. I mean, I always claim that I have actually poor genetics, so I'm sure this will reinforce it, or maybe it won't. So we'll see. I always say that I probably have the worst genetics on stage.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what your myostatin genes are like, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, right? My recovery, I know I can tell you, isn't awesome, which is why I've learned to become so meticulous with my nutrition. And I've never been a quick responder to training, I don't think, says the guy who walks around at 300 pounds all the time. I've never, truthfully, from my perspective, been an exceptional responder compared to some of the guys I'm on stage against. You know, these guys are training terribly, eating poorly, and growing like weeds. So I always compare, it's always relative, of course, to the guys I'm competing against. I always would say that I probably don't have the same genetic predisposition. So I'm really looking forward to learning about that and optimizing what you guys have to say. I'll probably be the guy who implements most of what you say. I'm sure the other guys do some as well, but
that's exactly what we want. Even if it's it doesn't have to be, I mean, we would never say, take everything we've got and do it. The point, what you have to do is you have to take the small bits of information and just implement small pieces and, see if that works, see if that doesn't, and then try this piece and see if that works and see if that doesn't. And, you end up just building out your own matrix of all the things that work right, except what this is kind of using your DNA to add the little bits in the puzzle. It's really cool. Really, really cool.
Well, that's exactly it. There's gaps in everyone's armor, right? There's always there's something you're not quite sure about. I'm always testing this. Like nutritionally for me, I've probably tried everything under the sun. I'm still not quite sure exactly what works for me. I'd love to have some insight from a scientific perspective. I say, hey, you need to do this, and you're predisposed to this. And that'd be, it's almost like, the the perfect scenario for me to hear what I'm genetically predisposed to. So yeah, I'm super excited about hearing about all that stuff. So where do you guys see your business going from here? What's your plan for the next 5 years, and what do you see expanding to? Are you just going to stay in the muscle niche, obviously with the name Muscle Genes? Where do you really want to see it go?
We've got a lot of stuff going on. I'm on the phone from the States at the moment. So we're doing a lot of work out in the US, and we're very focused. We have been very focused with regards to Muscle Genes and the product that Muscle Genes is, but we are going to be expanding into a few other sort of branded and niche areas as well. But the thing to remember is that we're still at an early stage in the genetics and fitness era and genetics and fitness market. And on that basis, you know, we're being the company that, you know, really takes the fundamental academic parts and the fundamental research very, very seriously. So if we're slow to bring things to the market, it's because they're not ready to be brought to the market yet. So we're taking our time. We're working with some great partners around the world. We've got a fantastic partner that we're now working with in the US. And you know, we've got a lot of stuff that's going to be happening out here. We're selling in many, many countries around the world. But it's really that the product will evolve as the product is supposed to evolve. And we think we can tell you certain things, but to be honest with you, we have to allow the market to kind of dictate the direction it wants it to go in some respects as well. So we're doing the things that we've been told that we should do by the people that are using the product. There's no better way to build a product and a business, right? Let the people that are using it, let the uptakers, let them tell you what it is that they want and expect from it, and you just build something that's much better and that's going to have much more value. So we have ideas, but we're also making sure that things don't happen quicker than they should. And we're also making sure that we listen to what we've been told. And you know, that's listening to the bodybuilders and to the people that really know how to build muscle, to make sure that what we're doing is in keeping with some of their ideas and the ideas that they've had over the last 30 or 40 years. And then once we have that really good understanding, then applying it to a broader market becomes a lot easier. But for us, it's, you know, we're still very focused on building out that understanding. And obviously, I say bodybuilders, and we do a lot of work with females as well. So we've worked with many of the girls on the Olympia stage, Natalia Mello, Ashley Kartwasser, Tiffany Boydston, Tawny Eubanks, a lot of the bikini athletes, and then people like Sarah Hurley in physique, Alison Fran in figure. So we are female focused as well. I should say that. It's obviously, you know, we're on the phone to one of the best bodybuilders of the 20th century. So we'll talk about bodybuilding.
Oh, come on!
I didn't know.
Well, put it like this, Ben. Is there anyone on the stage at the moment leg for leg comparison that's comparing to you? And I think the answer is no.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's all relative, right? I'm trying not to be the leg guy. I'm sure I could be the leg guy if I really pushed it and wanted to be, but ultimately, I'm trying to be a good bodybuilder, and not just be Tom Platz. One question I have for you guys: do you guys take any consideration into, you know, looking at pictures and stuff when you know, perhaps a client buys a genetic test? Do you ever take a look at, you know, what they look like, and do you ever ask any additional questions about, you know, their dietary practices or their training practices, other than obviously the top pros? Do you ever actually look at that stuff?
Yeah, we do.
Can I interrupt here?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, Dan's obviously talked about his perspective on it. I'm going to kind of come from I'm going to be reasonably broad, but the scientific angle and kind of
give us the science.
So basically, the key thing for me here is overlaying genetics with the environmental input. And that's just not the key thing in fitness. It's in disease, it's in biology, it's understanding those interactions. So what you said was actually fundamentally very interesting, because it will be fantastic and amazing to overlay biological genetic data with our environmental data, be it medical histories, be it food diaries, be it a computationally rewiring of someone's physiology. And I'm going to end it there, because Dan will kick me in the ass if I keep going on about other things are working.
Stu, what you're alluding to there, Stu, is you're almost kind of talking about sort of like getting into epigenetics now, aren't you?
Well, epigenetics amongst other things, but how, because the genetic information is a piece of the puzzle, and it cannot act by itself. But at the same time, if you ignore the genetics, you're missing a huge caveat of information into your program. And it's actually, like you said, taking a photo, taking biomechanical information, taking diet information with the genetic information, and that's kind of, as the scientists, what we're hammering through at the moment is getting these things integrated to make the best predictions possible.
I think I know one of the things that you're alluding to here, and I think one of the really great things and the great opportunities that we have is that whilst, you know, we're a genetics company, we also do work with a lot of really interesting other academics in other fields. So what we try and do is we try and conceptually blend other things that are going on in other scientific fields and figure out other ways that we can use them, you know, for the stuff that we're doing. So so there's going to be a lot of really, really cool developments over the sort of the coming year or the coming couple of years with some of the ideas that we've got about how we, you know, exactly what Stu says, how we overlay some of these principles.
So, Ben, do you have any kind of key ideas or things that maybe we're missing that you think would be really interesting for us to know?
I don't know. I'd have to kind of take a look at my results and compare it to what I've been doing, and then maybe I could get you guys some type of insight, you know, maybe similar to the way Johnny Jackson did, just giving you insight as to what he'd been doing and how it correlates with what you guys are suggesting. I'm curious to know about the epigenetic side, if you guys don't mind touching a little bit on that.
Mm.
I'll ask you a specific question. Is there any actionable items, like within the printout that people get with their muscle genes test, is there any actionable items that you guys say are like general rules, like, hey, don't do these things that can harm your genetics or, you know, negatively affect your expression or anything like that?
So with some of the new genes we look at, actually, depending on how you have eaten in the past, it will actually affect the outcome of your gene. So there's one where if you were obese, it would have one effect, or at least you've been carrying a lot of fat, and if you've been lean all your life. So there's actually sort of small inroads, especially because we also take questionnaire data on the past and integrate some of the research that he's done with regards to in how these environmental factors do affect the genes. In terms of more broadly, the field of epigenetics is incredibly new, and there's still just from some of the sort of conversations and the papers I read and the sort of podcasts I read, there's still I say epigenetics is probably where sort of genome biology was in 2000, which is still not quite there yet. People are, you know, the sort of essays that have been done to study epigenetics with regard to at least BMI, the results from them have not been verified yet, not been repeated, and also the experimental methods to study them are, you know, we're not quite sure yet if what we're seeing is noise, is a causative effect, or just a response to the way people have been eating in the past. So epigenetics, very, very interesting, but as of yet, basing predictions on it is not quite there. However, as Dan said, we're on the cusp of a very, very interesting period in the bodybuilding industry and the fitness industry, and then the health industry after that. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of this information that we find out will be invaluable to it.
just brilliant. I mean, I think you guys are getting into this at the exact right time. I'm sure you know that. It's the whole idea. There's tons of fad around the myostatin inhibition gene, and I think the world is, especially the world of bodybuilding, is certainly going to lean toward optimizing the genetics, learning about the genetics, how to overcome, quote unquote, the genetics. That's wonderful. Now, is there something that's have you guys done any extensive research or know of any extensive research into anything along the lines of not muscle fiber necessarily composition, but muscle fiber density or muscle density? Is that all genetically predetermined, or is it variable, or is there any specific gene that kind of codes for that we can determine?
We can give you an overview of something. And actually, it's quite interesting you mentioned this, because I mean, obviously, in terms of muscle fiber type, there's certain genes that do have an association to muscle fiber type. But one of our particular areas of interest has been looking at muscle fiber, muscle fiber growth and muscle growth in general.
Right.
And
yep.
We're going to be releasing. Guys, we're probably about 6 weeks away, aren't we, from releasing the new stuff where we look at the different types of muscle growth,
well,
the different types of hypertrophy
versus sarcoplasmic stuff.
Yeah, so we're probably about 4 to 6 weeks, aren't we?
So yeah, Mark can probably give a little bit of background to that.
Yeah, it's there's a lot to do on this yet, but there's some indication that some people react to resistance training by just having that old thing that you say about muscle volumizing. Well, that's sarcolemmal mass. So it's kind of like, inside your cell, you've got the cytoplasm. Well, sarcolemma is kind of the muscle cell's cytoplasm. And if that gets bigger, your muscle gets bigger. The thing is, the very interesting thing is it might not get stronger, but there's a lot of work to do on this yet. But but then other people respond more along the lines of having sarcolemic hypertrophy. So that's a more functional physical hypertrophy.
So we're looking at some gene variations at the moment where we can start to give some predictions about these kind of effects. Which obviously is pretty fundamental. I mean, if you can get this level of understanding of your own body, I mean, it's pretty useful information for people that are trying to, either look better or be professional bodybuilders or physique athletes or bikini competitors or just guys that want to look better generally.
Well, it's certainly amazing and valuable information for guys like you and I, but how much for the average people? Like, where do they get an understanding or an actionable item for something like that? Like, okay, we have more sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. I have more of a predisposition to sarcoplasmic hypertrophy.
Yeah,
are you guys including information in that?
There's kind of an informational aspect to the muscle genes report, and there's a recommendations aspect. Now, for most people, if we did like a mainstream version, or if someone who's just a casual weightlifter that wanted to lose a few pounds, put on a bit of muscle, bought the product, they'd probably read the top line stuff, because we're putting the new version, the next version, into a format that's much easier to just answer basic questions people have when they want to start working out or when they want to take it to the next level. But then for guys like yourself, you'd want to read into the nitty gritty. We're going to have information throughout the website and throughout your report that gives you that more in-depth information about things like the sarcolemmal versus sarcoplasmic, which the average guy, we know that like geeks like us love this stuff. But most people would just want to read, okay, so how do I eat?
We want actionable items, right?
And have the information for everybody, but you only have to read as much of the report as is useful for your own goals.
Yeah, but you have to remember, though, we are talking about actionable items here, because, if you know, for example, that you're going to get big, but you're not going to be very strong, then the actionable item there is, if you're going to get big anyway, then focus more on, things that are going to improve your strength so that you have an overall balance. So there are a lot of actionable items. And then we can go down the lines and say things like, okay, so, we know that, let's say you've got a female who has certain genes, and she might be able to build a bit of muscle, but she's fundamentally not particularly going to get strong. well, then it becomes important to provide an actionable item which allows the female to be strong, because we know that, you know, postmenopausal women, one of the best indicators of reduced morbidity, you know, in terms of osteoporosis and osteoarthritis and things like that, is increasing their strength. So these do become actionable items, but the point is that we're focusing on the people where we're going to learn the most information from, because it's pointless trying to claim these actionable items on people where we're talking about things that might improve them, you know, in 10, 20, 30 years' time. We're focusing on using what we know in a sport that we all really, really enjoy, in an industry that we all really, really enjoy, on actually giving the actionable information. So it might not be, if you go to the average person on the street and tell them to do this, you know, they might want to know why, or they might not want to know why, but there's still an action based on the information that we're generating.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, because I know my listeners will always say, like, well, what does that mean to me and how can I apply it? And I know this is incredibly valuable, because ultimately that's the big gap in most people. You know, most people are usually fighting against their genetics. They have no idea how to, you know, use the genetics to their advantage. And this is the number one tool, from what, you know, anyone's ever put in front of me. This is the number one tool to say, hey, this is what you should be doing and how you should be eating and training. Mm. So this is just invaluable. And I'm so appreciative for you guys giving me this time. And this has been amazing for me, and I can't wait to learn more. Is there anything else you guys want to add?
No, I mean, it's been a really great year for us and a great year for the business. It's been great because, you know, Mark and I have kind of worked in the industry for so long. So we've got a lot of, you know, really good friendships in the industry. And therefore, you know, we've been able to, you know, work with a lot of our friends, you know, on this as a project, and been able to introduce, you know, Sam and Stuart into the industry as well. And, you know, for one of the things for Sam and Stuart, and, you know, where we have our, you know, our office conversations, is that when you're not part of the industry, you don't actually realize, you know, that, you know, a lot of you guys, you know, I mean, you know, you're your own experiments, and you're your own, you know, you're scientists of yourself. And, you know, it's been fantastic for us, the amount of information that we've learned by working with you guys. And as I say, you know, it's one of the points that, you know, that Sam and Stuart always make as being new to the industry, you know, when we're kind of talking to people, is just how much you can actually learn from, you know, what you guys do. And I mean, you know, that your quote, Ben, from the Generation Iron movie of "You couldn't do what I do," and and it's so true for so many people. You know, they couldn't do what you do, but we can still learn from all of the things that you do, and then we can figure out how best to apply that. And that's been just one of the amazing things for us with Muscle Genes. So it's been a great company journey so far, and I would strongly recommend that people keep an eye on what we're doing, because there's some really, really cool things to come.
Definitely. I'll put a link up on my site for sure, and you know, send an email telling all my followers about it, so you guys get some more eyeballs.
Amazing.
I mean, absolutely wonderful and amazing, and you know, I really appreciate everyone's time. Thank you guys so much, and you know, hopefully we can do this again soon. Once I get mine back, maybe we can do a little another call, a little assessment, and you can tell everybody, you know, how genetically weak I am.
Yeah, right.
I could probably hook up with you at the Olympia if you have your test back by then. We can have a little face to face if you want.
That would be great, Mark. Thank you.
Yeah, that might be cool, because I'll be there, and there'll be more than a couple people who've had their tests back. You want to kind of grill me a bit?
Yeah, we'll put you on the hot seat.
Yeah,
that sounds great. Awesome. Well, thanks very much, guys.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. You guys have a wonderful day, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
And you, Ben. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Stay connected on Facebook / IFBB Ben PAK fan page, on Twitter at IFBB Ben PAK, and of course, BenPakulski.com.